Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for April 2012. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully will be of interest to everyone. Here are a couple of interesting facts that could be filed under Did You Know? Consumer Reports, who buys products in local stores, test them, and then publish their test results in monthly magazines, celebrated their 75th anniversary on October 28. They started in 1936 during the heart of the Great Depression. I subscribe to their magazine and look forward to each new issue. Chocolate, vanilla, cranberries, blueberries, maple syrup, potatoes, tomatoes, corn, and squash. All these foods and many more came from the New World and were staples of the Native American diet long before being introduced to Europeans. In fact, 60% of the crops now in cultivation originated in North and South America, first produced by Native Americans. The new two-story Chick-fil-A restaurant in Raleigh's Cameron Village is now open. We occasionally eat at a Chick-fil-A, and I want to find out what it feels like to eat upstairs at this new restaurant. I've recently heard of news reports deploring the condition of children's teeth. It spoke of children under 6 years of age with a mouthful of cavities. I believe this is caused by the consumption of too many sweetened foods and beverages. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention noted an increase, the first in 40 years, in the number of preschoolers with cavities in the study 5 years ago. Dentists nationwide say they are seeing more preschoolers at all income levels with 6 to 10 cavities or more. And the level of decay is so severe that they're often recommended using general anesthesia because young children are unlikely to sit through such extensive procedures while they're awake. Dentists offer a number of reasons so many preschoolers suffer from such extensive dental decay. Endless snacking and juice and other sweetened drinks at bedtime. Parents who choose bottled water rather than fluorinated tap water for their children. And a lack of awareness that infants should be, according to pediatric experts, visit a dentist by the age of one, even though they only might have a few teeth. Consumption of carbohydrate-rich foods, sugars, and starches on a frequent basis seem to be one of the biggest factors relating to early childhood decay, says Dr. Ron Venenzi of Apex. Our hectic lifestyles can certainly lead to parents relying heavily on ready-to-go processed snacks and juices, sports drinks, and so on. Because some toddlers dislike toothbrushing, some parents don't enforce it. Let's say a child is 1.5 and the child screams when they get their teeth cleaned, said Dr. Jed Best, a pediatric dentist in New York. Some parents say, I don't want my little darling to be traumatized. The metaphor I gave them is, I'd much rather have a kid cry with a soft toothbrush than when I have to drill a cavity. Exercising good oral health care early is important. There are 20 baby teeth, 12 of them, which should last until age 10 or 12, and they're very important space holders for the adult teeth. If you lose a baby tooth prematurely, then you are potentially creating a crowding problem for the adult set, not to mention how sad it is to have your child missing teeth in a smile. Among the many parts of the food industry that produce these ultra-sweet foods are the breakfast cereal manufacturers. For example, Kellogg has introduced a new cereal called Crave, spelled K-R-A-V-E. The front of the box shows the word Crave as if the letters were written with chocolate syrup. In one corner of the box is made the claim, good source of fiber, made with whole grain. Because I had a coupon and the introductory price was fairly inexpensive, I bought a box. As a general rule, when I eat cereal, I add no sugar. I have found that there's enough sugar in the unsweetened cereals that no more is needed, and I am one with a sweet tooth. Lived up to being a cereal with whole grain outside with a sweet chocolate on the inside. For me, they were overly sweet, and I'll never buy the second box. The dictionary definition of the word crave, spelled with a C, is an eager longing or strong desire for. It will be interesting to see if Crave cereal is still on the store shelves a year from now. Also, I've seen that General Mills have been running TV ads for some of their products. They stress the fact that they're made with whole grains. Health folks have been telling us that we should eat more whole grains. But from my observation, the cereals General Mills are pushing as containing whole grains are all their pre-sweetened cereals. Children are strongly influenced by the foods they see advertised on television and elsewhere, creating a food marketing environment that supports rather than undermines the efforts of parents to encourage healthy eating among children will have a significant impact on reducing the nation's childhood obesity epidemic, says Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius in a recent news release. When grocery shopping, leave the youngsters at home. And again, we cannot stress enough reading the labels. Often the suggested serving is less than a cup of the cereal. If serving is one half or three quarters of a cup, is that what you eat? As a friend of mine used to say, that's just enough to make me mad. In the News and Observer for March 4, 2012, retired food editor Debbie Moose wrote about spices and how so many cooks keep them long after they've lost their special flavors. Debbie says that some folks have the attitude about herbs and spices that are like wedding vows. They should last until death do us part. She adds, I wonder how long ideally one should keep herbs and spices, although for me, storage of herbs, spices, and chocolate is not a problem. According to the Food Lover's Companion by Sharon Tyler Herbst and Ron Herbst, published by Barron's in 2009, it's 6 months for crushed or ground herbs and spices. They will retain flavor longer in airtight containers, so use glass jars with screw tops. Store them in a cool, dark space, not over the stove. That's not a cool, dark place unless you never cook. Whole spices like nutmegs will hold their flavor for up to a year. Now you know. There is a solution. A little before the holidays, my wife decided to go through her spices, and we ended up throwing a lot of them away. We washed and dried the containers. We then went to a Whole Foods market where they have many spices that can be bought in bulk. You place them in plastic bags, the amount you feel you want, mark with their code number, and the clerk weighs them at the checkout. It was surprising to us how little these spices cost. We then, with the help of a small funnel, put the spices into the jars we'd saved. They were labeled and dated and are ready to be used. Think along the same lines. Has your food gone rancid? Does your cupboard hold a package of unfinished crackers, an old bag of whole grain flour, or some leftover nuts from holiday baking? Or perhaps on that shelf is a bottle of vegetable oil that we can't seem to be able to empty. If so, you may be harboring dangerous rancid foods. Protecting against rancidity, which occurs when oils deoxidize, has long been a challenge for home cooks, but a recent stew of factors has made the issue more serious. This situation arises from the rising popularity of healthy polyunsaturated fat, whole grain flours, and warehouse stores, which taken together have resulted in American pantries full of food that goes rancid much faster than we're used to. Add to America's growing acclimation to the taste of rancid foods and the problem gets much larger. So what's wrong with eating rancid oils? One reason is that they lose their vitamins, but they can also develop potentially toxic compounds that have been linked to advanced aging, neurological disorders, heart disease, and cancer, said lipid specialist Eric Decker. They're carcinogenic, pro-inflammatory, and very toxic, added integrative medicine specialist Andrew Weil. They're also widespread in the food chain. The growing product is a byproduct of swapping trans fats for polyunsaturated fats over the past 10 years. This has resulted in a whopping 58% drop in trans fatty acid consumption in the United States, according to a recent government report. But trans fats are very stable, meaning they took forever to go rancid. The same is true of highly refined white flours. But when these flours and fats were replaced with whole grain flours and polyunsaturates such as corn and soybean oil, that shelf stability collapsed. Manufacturers noted this and had to change their delivery schedule and formula, says Kantha Shelke, a food scientist and spokeswoman for the Institute of Food Technologists. And some consumers became irrationally angry that their food doesn't last as long as it had before. Indeed, while Americans follow orders to ditch saturated and trans fats for polyunsaturated vegetable and monounsaturated fats, olive, canola, and peanut fats, they didn't realize these healthier fats don't last nearly as long. People buy these huge containers of oil at warehouse clubs and just don't realize there's no way they can use it before it goes rancid, Decker said. They don't recognize it as a problem. While monounsaturates like olive oil or peanut oil can also go rancid after about a year, they are still 10 times more stable than polyunsaturates, according to Decker. People need to minimize their use of polyunsaturated oils, Weil said. But if you do use them, keep them in the refrigerator in the dark and buy only small amounts that you can use up quickly. And while some consumers can sniff and toss out rancid foods, many don't know the telltale stale, grassy, paint-like odor. Others may not be able to detect them, though, through layers of other flavorings. And still others might feel compelled to consume them out of thriftiness or hopes that a strong sauce will mask the taste. Because air, light, and heat speed up oxidation, it's normally a bad idea, for example, to buy vegetable oil in a clear bottle and place it in a counter in a warm kitchen for several months. Exotic oils like macadamia, walnuts, sesame, and flaxseed, nuts, and whole grain flours are also major candidates for fast rancidity and should all be stored in the refrigerator or freezer. Whole intact grains and nuts in their shells, however, last much longer. While when grains are ground, their interiors are exposed to the air, said food scientist and author Harold McGee. The whole grain contains the germ and the bran, both of which are rich in oils that are especially prone to oxidizing and going rancid. So you end up with off flavors very quickly in whole grain flours when compared to refined flours. Frequent shopping for small quantities of fresh and freshly processed foods has served much of the world well in avoiding rancid food. Americans, however, favor a different shopping pattern that involves less frequent trips for larger quantities of shelf-stable foods. Though some hope that our sense of smell and taste can help us avoid rancid foods, recent studies raise doubts. Shelke noted that new immigrants to the United States often think peanut butter, now often made with polyunsaturates, smells rancid, while Native Americans think it just smells like peanut butter. McGee notes that the problem extended to rancid olive oils, which in a 2011 University of California study were actually preferred by 44% of American tasters. We assume that rancid flavors are normal, McGee said, because in some cases that's what we've gotten used to. So what to do? In general, buy products that contain oils or fats in small quantities. Store most cooking oils in a cool, dark cabinet, not next to the stove. Refrigerate polyunsaturated oils, especially fish, nut, and flaxseed oils. Store nuts and whole grain flours in the freezer. The last thing a supermarket shopper wants to see is long lines and empty cash registers. It can lead to bad behavior on both sides of the checkout counter. 10 years ago, shoppers envisioned a day when RFID tags would allow them to whisk shopping carts through a checkout without unloading them, or bypass the checkout lane and ring up the grocers as they walk through the store. But RFID never got cheap enough for razor-thin grocery profit margins, and we're still stacking groceries on an early 20th century conveyor belt. Year after year, retail trade shows buzz with the prospects of new checkout technology. But the task of paying for groceries mostly still depends on clerks and shoppers being efficient. There have been some innovations in checkout lanes, and shoppers will see a few more over the next couple of years. Smartphone scanners and technology that keeps up with the flow of shoppers may speed up shopping trips, but many grocery chains say they're finding that their employees are the best weapon against long lines. More stores are configuring their express checkouts with one line leading to multiple cashiers, which have been proven to be speedier. That system has kept shoppers from developing line envy. Trader Joe's, for instance, uses a single line for express checkout. Some Whole Foods stores have self-checkout registers, but for quick trips, the single line leading to several cashiers is considered faster, says Mark Dixon, Whole Food Market's Southwest Regional President. Kroger added an express checkout configuration in some of its larger stores. Choosing the right line can be frustrating even for a scientist. Dick Larson, a Massachusetts Institute of Technology engineering professor who's known as Dr. Q because he studies the psychology of waiting in line, says a trip to the grocery store initiates all sort of Q calculus. Do I buy that 13th item and then have to wait in a longer line? Do I try the self-checkout, risking that I'll not know how to do the fresh produce? Do I join the slightly longer human operating checkout that seems to be moving faster than one of the shorter line? Kroger's been running commercials touting its new checkout system, which monitors customers coming through the door and estimates how many of them will need a lane open in 30 minutes. But the system relies on managers paying attention to it and opening registers before the shoppers get there. We know people like our stores, but when they're ready to go, they want to go out the door fast, says Kroger Southwest President Bill Breitz. The new system was installed in all Kroger stores at the end of last year. Dixon said Whole Foods is experimenting with a technology including square readers that plug into iPhones and swipe credit cards and other handheld devices. Some of it works and some of it doesn't, he said. At the end of the day, nothing beats having plenty of registers and staffing them right. I feel certain that most of us, when checking out of the grocery store, do look for a shorter checkout line. Beginning in early March, Food Lion introduced a double coupon promotion in their Triangle and Fayetteville area stores. Just weeks after the supermarket's apparent chain announced it was closing more than 100 stores. It will be the first time the Salisbury-based grocery chain will offer double coupons in the highly competitive Triangle grocery market, though it has tested the promotion in other areas, said Food Lion spokeswoman Christy Phillips Brown. Raleigh and Fayetteville are very important markets to us, Phillips Brown said, and we're pleased to bring this new promotion to our customers. In January, Food Lion's parent company, the Belgian conglomerate Delahaye Group, announced it was closing 126 underperforming stores, including one in Kerry. The closings are part of what Delahaye called its new game plan to revive slumping sales. Part of that is a change in strategy that Food Lion had been testing in the Triangle and Chattanooga markets since last May. The grocery cut prices on 6,000 items, reorganized shelves, increased staffing, and made efforts to improve customer service. Food Lion faces stiff competition in the Triangle from regional and national chains. Many of them aggressively offer generous coupon promotions. Matthew-based Harris Teeter and Winston-Salem-based Lowe's Foods routinely double coupons up to 99 cents in value. Kroger stores in the Triangle double coupons up to 50 cents every day. Food Lion has, until now, only redeemed coupons at face value. Our focus is having everyday low prices, and from time to time we'll have other promotions, Phillips Brown said. Previous areas where Food Lion has recently tested double coupons include part of Georgia and Tennessee. Food Lion has stores in 10 states in the Mideast and Mid-Atlantic areas. Supermarket analyst Phil Lempert says the chain is likely using double coupons as a test to see if it can drive traffic. But Lempert says the problem is that if stores compete just on price, they will never win. There will always be someone, Walmart or Aldi, who will be cheaper. In the category of food as medicine, some of the most potential disease fighters around are also the strongest flavored and stinkiest. So says Suzanne Havila Hobbs, whom we have heard from before. She continues, among the most elite of the good-for-you crop are the brassica or cruciferous vegetables such as broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts. You may think of cruciferous vegetables as being in the cabbage family, too. Cabbage is definitely included in this group, but so are many other that share similar qualities. Other examples include kale, collards, bok choy, daikon, turnips, arugula, watercress, radishes, and rutabagas. These vegetables get their name from the four-petal flowers they produce that looks like a crucifer or cross. They are rich sources of dietary fiber, beta-carotene, vitamin C, and a collection of photochemicals associated with health benefits. These foods are also rich in calcium, iron, and folate, an important B vitamin. Eating generous amounts of cruciferous vegetables is associated with a lower risk of some forms of cancer, including lung, liver, breast, esophagus, small intestine, and colon. Some research suggests that as little as 5 servings a week can significantly reduce cancer risk. This is not much food. 1 serving is equal to about 1/2 cup raw chopped cabbage, broccoli, or cauliflower, or 1 cup of raw chopped kale. A couple of good-sized helpings of any of these foods, and you've got your 5 servings covered. Cruciferous vegetables are distinctive for their nutritional value, but they stand out for being strongly flavored and even odoriferous, too. How can you experience them depends on many factors, including your personal body chemistry, as well as the vegetable is cooked or raw. It's worth experimenting to find new ways to use these vegetables in your diet. For example, you may like the flavor of cooked broccoli better than raw. And you may find you like some vegetables best when they're blended with other flavors. For example, I like raw cabbage, but I prefer it mixed with sweet shredded carrots and vinegar in coleslaw. She concludes, if you're looking for an easy way to improve your diet, work more cruciferous vegetables into your meals. Thanks, Suzanne, for these suggestions. Here's an interesting article written by Kathleen Purvis, who is food editor of the Charlotte Observer. She begins, an editor who sits nearby me likes to show me his lunch every day. He presents it for my approval like I'm the mother confessor of cooking. The great thing is his enthusiasm. He takes such pride in his cooking and packaging his own lunch every day. He likes to discuss the smallest detail with the seriousness of a scientist. His regular debate, pasta. How do you pick the right shape? How do you decide what kind of sauce? Should you rinse it after you cook it? How can one thing have so many mysteries? Actually, I look forward to his daily quizzes. Like my lunch friend, I like thinking about the mysteries of small things. So here are 10 things I know about pasta. Pasta comes in all shapes and sizes because no single shape is perfect for everything. Thin, smooth noodles need light, smooth sauces. Heavier noodles hold heavier sauces. Flat ribbons are for cheese and cream sauces. Tubes, shells, and curls are for chunky sauces with bits of meat and vegetables. Always start with a big, deep pot and lots of water. We need all the room to reach our full potential. Temperature counts. Make sure the water is really boiling. The most efficient way to bring water to a boil is to cover it while it heats, but don't cover the pot when the pasta cooks or it'll boil over. Always salt the water just before you add the pasta. Salt added in the cooking water will flavor the pasta better than adding it later. If you season it after you cook it, you'll use more salt because it won't get absorbed as the pasta swells. Keep things stirring up at the beginning. We all get stuck without a little agitation. Don't add oil. If you do it right, lots of water at a full boil and stir it at the beginning, your pasta won't stick together. Besides, oil will keep the sauce from clinging to the pasta. When you drain the pasta, save some of the cooking water. A splash or two of starchy cooking water is magic for pulling the sauce together. Try this. Put a heat-proof serving bowl in the sink and drain some of the pasta water into it as you drain the pot. Use a splash or two of pasta water as needed, then empty the bowl and add the pasta and sauce to the warm bowl. Never rinse pasta. The starch clinging to it helps hold on to the sauce. Strike while it's hot. If you add hot pasta to hot sauce, it will absorb more sauce and flavor. Give things a chance to come together. Cook the pasta until it's almost done, but not quite done. Then drain it and add it to the sauce. Add a splash of cooking water. Stir it all together and cook for a couple minutes more. Add anything you need to finish it, like cheese or fresh herbs, and serve. After reading these instructions, I'm ready to sit down to a plate of spaghetti. The headline screams, U.S. gets a gold medal in girth. We're number one, but this time it's not a good thing. Americans are the fattest people in the world, and that's what the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, reported in its 2012 obesity update. These findings are enough to make you lose your appetite or send you running for the gym. According to the OECD, less than 1% of Americans were obese in 1980, and now we and our neighbor Mexico share the gold medal for fatness. At least one out of three of us is obese. Another third of us is trying to get there. If the current trends continue, more countries will join us within the next 10 years. The OECD also shares these sour tidbits. People who are severely overweight share a lifespan reduction similar to that of smokers and die 8 to 10 years sooner than normal weight people. Our U.S. weight problem accounts for up to 10% of our health care costs. That figure will increase because the cost of treating obesity-related diseases and conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and arthritis. Being overweight can affect your job prospects, too. Obese people are more likely to be out of work and earn substantially less than normal weight people. Not everyone shares our pain. In Japan and Korea, the prevalence of obesity is only 4%. We have some work to do. Governments around the world are on red alert, launching health promotion initiatives and coordinating national programs like First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign. There's more pressure on food companies to improve the nutritional profiles of their products, reduce portion sizes in restaurants, and limit advertising for junk food that targets kids. There's also more global chatter, the action about the potential for taxes to create economic events that support health. Last year, for example, Denmark, Hungary, and Finland introduced taxes on certain foods high in saturated fat, sodium, and added sugars. France this year added a tax on soft drinks, and we're still debating the idea here at home. We've got to do something, and it needs to be bigger and bolder than what we've done so far. If we're going to be the fattest, we need to lead the world in finding a solution. Do you have any suggestions? Until next month at this time, this has been Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for April 2012. This program is designed for blind and print-impaired people, but we hope that you found it interesting. There are a lot of things that we could talk about. One is this matter of recipe calling for celery. What is a stalk and what is a rib? And shouldn't the recipes make a distinction? So until next month at this time, this has been Bob Krueger with Thought for Food.